Welcome to Becoming Powerhouse, where we discuss the tough lessons I've learned while taking my two companies from negative revenue to over seven figures. We'll talk about the raw and vulnerable truths about being boss, as well as tips and strategies you can implement immediately for better business results. I'm your host, Nicole Overkamp, the founder and CEO of Wilcox Financial Group and Powerhouse Coaching. You can see links and other resources in our notes. Don't forget to head over to powerhousemoney.com to grab your free Power Bundle for business and subscribe to our newsletter. Now, let's dive in to today's episode.
Hey, powerhouses. So for today's episode, we have another really fun interview. I'm super excited to have a conversation with this woman. She is by far one of the most interesting people I've had a conversation with over the last year, and her story is really cool. So I think you are going to enjoy it. Dr. Deborah Ekstrom hails from Massachusetts and has spent the last 40 years practicing plastic surgery and is a student of money and wealth building. This is where it gets interesting. She founded Money Loves Women, a media and training company to help women access their power, achieve wealth, and create impact. This is probably why we have so many synergies. And she's devoted to living an extraordinary life. So, Deb, welcome.
Thank you so very much. And I'm so honored to be on your show.
Thank you. And you know, Deb, I would love to hear, and I'm sure everyone listening, you own a plastic surgery practice. You've been doing that for a really long time. I'd love to know, you know, how that's been going, challenges that you've had, and what made you pivot?
Yeah, that's all interesting stuff. Well, I grew up on a farm in the Midwest, so I have a lot of Midwestern values, hard work, integrity, all of those kinds of things. And I really loved science, and I like art, but I love science and the social sciences and actually economics and things like that. But having a broad background really can be helpful in medicine. And I like the idea of becoming a medical doctor. However, I became a medical doctor at a time when not a lot of women were welcomed into medicine. So that was really challenging. And it took a huge amount of persistence to put up with some of the things that we talk now about with diversity, equity, and inclusion. Those were not even on the radar then. So it was a real challenge, especially in the surgical field. But, and I didn't start toward plastic surgery because I thought it would take too long. So I went a little circuitously, but ended up there anyway. And I think I ended up in plastic surgery for a couple of reasons. One is I like the interaction with people, and there's a lot of psychiatry and psychology involved, which I also have training in. And I just love the artistry of it. And it's really about the same thing as Money Loves Women in terms of it's helping, especially women, other people, other men too, but become more successful. So, but during all of that time, I have been very fascinated with money and business and how money works and making money. And I wasn't taught any of that growing up.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that easy to find that information because the internet didn't exist yet. So I did haunt the library. I always have been a reader. And I'm even worse than I used to be. But I'm reassured to hear that people like Mark Cuban reads 3 hours a day. And you know, that sounds like my ideal day, to be able to read 3 hours a day.
What anyway, a luxury.
I was in academic medicine all that time while I was training. And what I noticed was how inefficiently the systems worked. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't work well for me. It makes me a little crazy. I'm very operations oriented. So when I finished and kind of got my feet on the ground, I went into private practice. And I didn't really know much about business, but I found some mentors. I learned how to build a team. One of the big challenges for me was to learn how to become a leader. I mean, I think I was a natural leader, but to become an effective leader. And that's about self-mastery. So I did a lot of work on myself. I grew up in an angry family. So I really had to pay attention to not bring that into my relationships and my interactions, not to suppress it, but to overcome that way of interacting, because it was my pattern that I had seen growing up. Yeah. So learning to be a leader, and then really handling the numbers was a challenge. But once you've run one business, you can run another business. I like to think of it this way. I read this recently. Your first stream of income is for stabilization, your financial stability. Your second business, though, changes your psychology. And your third business changes your life. So I found out that I loved business. I think it's one of the most effective ways for women to build wealth. And I think women are naturally good at business, honestly.
I'd agree.
They have, because they're cooperative and they have big social areas that have developed in their brains. I think they, in modern days, women can be very effective and perhaps more effective than their male counterparts. So I think business is a natural way for women to grow well. So I was in medicine first. I ran my own practice. I learned business. I learned to build a team. That's hard to do, as we talked about earlier. Finding the right person and waiting to find that right person to be with you. And now in my medical practice, I just do the things I like to do. And I have really good people doing all the rest of the things. And we really have great fun. I've learned to be a really good leader and how to lead a business and make a business work effectively and efficiently. So I took all of that and have been applying it now toward Money Loves Women. I'd also been fascinated by the internet, even though I didn't really, you know, I didn't come up through internet years. And I have to acquire all of my skills, which is so much harder than assimilating them, which, you know, I see 2-year-olds sitting in my waiting room with a pacifier in their mouth, you know, a little binky, and playing on an iPad. You
know? Right. Yeah, it's so just second just nature.
Assimilate those skills. Yeah. So but I learned about money and wealth building the whole time that I was in business. And it was difficult. And I don't want it to be that difficult for other women. So my next business, because I never plan to retire unless I have body or mind things that prevent me from working. My next business, Money Loves Women, is going to be to help women and to grow wealth in every area of their life, but especially money, because that's most confounding for women. You know, it's a skill set. And you can transfer that skill set. It's like when you hire somebody into your business who has good intelligence and good integrity and good work habits, you can teach them to fulfill a role. And you can teach people wealth building. You absolutely can. And the things that are more challenging, though, is how to make your life work so you can work, figuring that out. And women have had to figure that out on their own, right? Because it's not the way men make their lives work. And then the really important piece is the personal presence piece, which is self-mastery.
Yeah. That self-mastery, I think, is huge. And I want to go back a little bit, Deb, to when you were talking about learning to become a effective leader, because when and there's so many parts of this, but I'm going to start my own business because I know I'm an expert at my craft and I can do it better than what I'm surrounded by. And I have this vision. So there's that part of it. And then there's the building part of it, the actual business part that I think we all at some point in time get our ass handed to us, right? And we're like, oh shit, this is a lot harder than I thought it was going to be. And we learn. And the more we learn it, that's how we simultaneously, I think, build wealth, right? But that said, you can't build an effective business without adequate help in hiring a brilliant team around you and leading them effectively. And what I found a lot with our clients and especially coaching clients is we're constantly questioning ourselves. Are we doing enough? Could we be doing better? And are there components of ourselves maybe that we're not that self-aware of, but everybody else is, you know, the bad habits that we don't realize. And so as you were growing your medical practice, Deb, what were some of the resources or tools that helped you in becoming a more effective leader?
At the beginning, my husband at the time had a very successful practice. He was out in private practice. And his manager, who was managing his business, coached me a lot. And that was really helpful. But I also talked to other business owners, not necessarily in medicine. And that was helpful. And then I started purchasing books. Entrepreneurs Organization, I don't think existed yet. There weren't a lot of official organizations that I knew of. And because in medicine, you're very cloistered in that specialty, in that that field, you don't come in contact, aside from your patients, with a lot of other people. And I can tell you that the biggest challenge, though, was time, because medicine is very organized toward overwork. And when you're supporting your husband in his practice, you have your children, especially when they're small, and, you know, keeping everything under control there, and then building a business, making sure your educational components are covered. So we have to have a certain number of credits every year, as you probably do too, to maintain your licensure and your credibility, and just to just to stay up with what's going on. So putting all of that together, I think it's a huge challenge, and it's getting worse, because information is flowing faster, things are changing faster, and staying expert in your field is getting more challenging. So it was and is challenging. I'm lucky now, my kids are grown. I have my team in place, you know, my business is mature, but now I'm starting this new business, and I'm actually quite a proponent of acquiring businesses instead of growing them, but here I am growing a business. And then my stream of income is intended to be an acquired business. And I'm looking for a business right now with my daughter-in-law, but it's going to be a completely different kind of business again. So, but business is business.
That's right. It is. And sometimes we get stuck in our heads about it, you know, and what that is. And so what has been one of your biggest challenges that you faced in growing business, and how did you overcome that? Aside from everything you said you just had to manage as you were building.
I think making my life work so I could work was a really big challenge. And I worked a lot, and I took call. So that means I was gone in the middle of the night. I had a lot of sleep deprivation. So effectively being able to effectively run a household and raise kids was a challenge. And my husband was on call, and he was away in the middle of the night, and he had a practice as well. So the two of us were, it was pretty crazy demands. And that was, for me, the biggest challenge once I got all the other pieces in place. So I had to make things up, like I had to figure out how to get my household to run. And I hired people to do that. I learned to interview over the phone. I learned to write really effective ads for finding good people. I had an ad that was Mary Poppins Wanted to catch people's eye. And then I found a whole series of people who were really, really great, who would live within 10 miles of my house. And I learned that I had to have somebody to get my kids to soccer practice. I couldn't do their homework and with them and make dinner. So a lot of, I had to learn a lot of those things. And my my husband, I found if I was cooking, he couldn't really get the house picked up and get the kids in their baths and have them ready for bed by the time they'd melt down. So he took over the cooking, and I did all that because I was just more organized. But it was a lot of
trial. So you can multitask, right?
It was a lot of trial and error, and there wasn't anybody to really show me the way. How do you make this work? So I had to figure it out. But I did. I even once my kids were in school, I realized that I needed somebody in my home to manage my home. And what I've done now is I have my home manager and my chef are the same person. And I need to be better at training. Just like you do in your business, you know, the better you are at training, the better results you get. So I need to be better at training and consider that management piece of business. That was really challenging for me. And maybe it's easier for people now, I don't know. I was committed to having my kids at home rather than in daycare. They did go to nursery school and so forth, but I had an in-home caregiver, and I was gone 12 hours a day usually. You know, it was like 6 to 6 that she was there. So it was a lot to put together, and finding that right person, mm-hmm. just like it is in your business, is a big challenge.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're really the leader of your home in orchestrating all of that and your business. And, you know, Deb, I don't think it's gotten any easier, and, and I don't think it's changed much in a lot of parents too. You know, you have this dichotomy of wanting to build and grow this empire and do the things that really are your purpose. You know, your kids are your purpose. You love them. They fulfill you, but often, you know, you're doing this bigger vision and there's so much guilt associated with that. And nowadays, I think part of it too is that we are so quick to throw judgment or absorb what we're seeing out there and put it on ourselves as if we have to follow what everybody else is doing, or taking that as quote unquote should. And so I think it's so powerful, one, to hear from women like you who did it with grace and did it well, but it wasn't easy. Like, it was still really hard. But also the fact that, like, it's taking into consideration what you want, your situation, and then doing what works for you versus caring about what everyone else is thinking, saying, or shooting on you, if you will, right?
Yeah, I didn't really pay a lot of attention to that, but yeah. I know I went through medicine at a time when women weren't surgeons. Mm-hmm. And so I'd kind of got over that pretty fast.
Yeah, probably developed your really care thick what anybody skin. Else thought in
terms of, but I have to yeah. say that the culture in medicine that pushes you back to work pretty fast, I regret that I didn't stay home longer with my kids. Yeah. I think, especially my second one, I think that would have been good for both of us. Mm-hmm. And the culture was almost like, how can you inconvenience us by having a child? You know, that right. was the
yeah.
that was
yeah.
sort of the message. So I think I went back to work faster than mm-hmm. I would have liked. Although I have to say, after I was home 6 weeks with my first son, it was like, get me out of here. Let me talk to adults.
yeah.
Some people can do childcare better than I can. And I also learned to separate two things. There's parenting and there's childcare, and they're not mm-hmm. the same. Mm-hmm. So I felt like I was a really good parent, mm-hmm. Even though I was gone a lot. It's easiest to be gone when they're young. And then when mm-hmm. they got to be older, I wasn't gone as much and my practice was more mature. Mm-hmm. But there is a difference between childcare and parenting, and not everybody's called to do childcare. And I wasn't called yeah. to do childcare. It wasn't what I was good at. It mm-hmm. made me a little crazy. But there's people out there who are just awesome at it, and it's clearly their yeah. calling. And yeah. those were people that I brought into my home to do mm-hmm. yeah. childcare. And I was still a parent, and I was worried that my kids wouldn't know who their mm-hmm. parent was. But that was never an issue. They knew very yeah. clearly. And I got some real positive feedback from my kids when they got to be adults.
I love that.
At one point they said, yeah, you know, we learned these various things, and, you know, it was really impressed on us. And you know, it was pretty tough. You know, we had parenting was pretty tough. And then they looked at my husband and they said, and it wasn't you, Dad.
Common theme. Yeah.
There's always one parent that's more lenient and one parent that's mm-hmm. more demanding, right? And I fell into the demanding side of things. but it had to be that way because, you know, just can't function. And I think lots of other women are like that too. They're managing their homes, they're managing their families, and they're the hub around which everything works. And I mm-hmm. see that over and over in my plastic surgery practice. Yeah. How, you know, when I take women out of the equation because they have to recover from a surgery, mm-hmm. Sometimes they have to assign a lot of tasks, and people find out at home how yeah. important that woman is.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's just wild. And even not only that, but I have women who are starting a business and they have that conversation with their partner. Hey, I'm going to need help. They're on board. And then they realize what they actually have to do
yes.
that was being done before. And it shifts, right? And all of a sudden, what was agreeable is now a problem because there's such a disconnect sometimes with what the amount of just, I think, the in general capacity of what we do is so underappreciated, but underrealized. And maybe that's why in part we have become such effective leaders and business owners because it's multifaceted. And I think we, by nature, are better able to adapt to many layers of things and multitasking, if you will, but that level of resilience sometimes where men are great at like monotasking, you know, one thing at a time, and have difficulty sometimes. At least I also find this with my husband at handling more than one thing at once, you know, or hearing multiple things at one time and then processing that. So, you know, it's certainly a shift and then finding that partner, of course, that is supportive, whether you're recovering from plastic surgery. And my goodness, I've had so many girlfriends again struggle with that in terms of like, God, like just this 2 weeks, you know, is it that much to ask for? And, you know, and accepting too that it's okay to let some things fall apart, you know, and sometimes we, especially if you're type A, and I know Deb, you're probably a little bit like that, like I am, it's okay to let things fall apart a little bit or not be perfect all the time so that you can really hyper focus on something and everything usually just works out fine, you know, and we recover. So
yeah, it's important not to perfect too perfectionistic for sure. And let things slide a little bit sometimes. But I want to go back to that little thing you said about the difference between men and women. Mm-hmm. I think women's brains are actually different. They're actually different, so that men tend to be much more short-term linear thinkers, mm-hmm. and women tend to be more branched thinkers and tend to be more long view, and you need both. You honestly need both, but I think women are, as I've said before, really uniquely positioned, and I really want to encourage women to consider business as a wealth building tool. There's other ways you can build wealth, but there's only about 10 paths to riches, and a lot of them aren't available to most individuals. But business is available to everybody, pretty much. You know, it doesn't. You don't have to be an A student to run a business. You can be a C student, a D student.
You just need grit
and an effective leader. And your intelligences may be in a different place than the analytical intelligences that get tested in school. So I don't want to see people get discouraged. I think it takes persistence to run a business. It takes commitment and it takes focus. And it's, I just read Lisa Nichols' book, No Matter What. And she talked about how she made a commitment that she was going to do certain things no matter what. Mm-hmm. And Lisa was told in high school that she should never speak in public, and she was the worst writer that her teacher had ever seen. And she's incredibly successful. She chose to have a successful life and successful outcome. And I think, and runs a business, successful business. And every one of us can do that. Mm-hmm. It's a choice and a vision, and then following through. And you are coaching people like that all the time. And you know all those facets. And I think when you're coaching or you're working with lots of different businesses, you start to see the commonalities. Whereas if you're in a business yourself, you know what makes your business work, and you know. But I think it really is, it's so helpful to have a coach who is involved with multiple businesses, because that person's already separated out a lot of what works and what doesn't work. And it can accelerate the success curve for someone. Having coaches, I think women are much more open to having coaches too. Having a coach, if you want to accelerate anywhere, it's really important.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And it's been so helpful too, even for me. And I was just saying this yesterday, I wish I would have known about organizations like EO or WPO sooner. I wish I would have known that there were actually coaches I could hire sooner, which is crazy that I didn't know that. And when I found out about it, I was still a little afraid. I was afraid to make that commitment or that investment. And then once I did, my biggest regret was not doing it sooner. Because I was just so fearful. I was fearful of the, you know, what if I'm judged and they think I'm completely incompetent, or what if it's not worth it? And, you know, you do all of those what if circles in your head, but it's so important. And I think women are more receptive to coaching too, because we tend to be such active sponges for knowledge and understanding and learning. And then empathy is a huge part of it as well. In knowing that if we have a gap to fill, like how can I get there, and who can help? And being open to that is so critical in growth and business, and anybody can do it, right? And you're so right. And we don't give ourselves enough credit at all in recognizing how powerful we are, how smart we are, but how capable we are, and just blocking out the noise from opinions of people who like really don't matter is so important in that journey. So that said, you know, Deb, what is one thing that you would like everyone to know or be aware of, who is listening, who is currently building a business and in that journey?
Well, I think the thing I would really like them to know is that building a business is just one piece of your wealth building process. Mm-hmm. It's a very important piece. Yeah. You know, the steps are, first of all, making a decision for wealth. And I think if you're building a business, unless it's just a replacement for your salary, mm-hmm. so you're your own boss, but you really just bought yourself a job. That's not that, that's, you know, unless you're doing that, but a business can be a pathway to wealth. So you have to make that decision for wealth. And then you need to take responsibility for your money. And if you're going to have a successful business, typically you're already doing that, but you can always fine tune that some more. Mm-hmm. And then you have to really, you have to become a good leader. So you have to check your mindset. Mm-hmm. And to build wealth, if you don't have your mind in the right place, you're going to hit the ceiling, you know, a glass ceiling, if you want to call it that, but you're not going to be able to progress. Mm-hmm. So getting your mindset so that you know yourself and have self-mastery is really critically important. And then what I tell people, because people sometimes start in a business that isn't necessarily really putting your boat into fast-moving water. They're mm-hmm. in stagnant water. So design your life with wealth in mind. So if find the business that not only lights you up, but mm-hmm. also has good potential for growth and for really creating the financial support for your stability or for your second stream of income or whatever it is. So designing your life with wealth in mind. And those are the basic building blocks for business or for wealth mm-hmm. building. It doesn't matter, right? So then once you design your life with wealth in mind, then you have to create your cash machine. And sometimes people do that first and it doesn't matter because you're going back to these steps all the time and you're doing all these things together. But to kind of put it in a hierarchy makes it easier to learn and understand. Mm-hmm. And then once you've got your cash machine going, you have to figure out one more thing to learn. Right? How do you invest that money so it works mm-hmm. for you, so you have freedom? And it's going to be, I think we're looking at some very serious challenges coming down the road here. Yeah. I think we could potentially have a money crisis, a financial crisis in our world that is beyond anything we've ever seen before. We have very likely more pandemics coming down the road. There's lots mm-hmm. of, you know, climate change issues. There's a lot of things that are very, very big issues for our world that we need women to help solve. Yes. And I think women are the future of the world. I've said this many times, the future's feminine. And that's why I'm so passionate about helping women build wealth, because that helps them build power and influence. Mm-hmm. And once we have more power and influence, we're going to have more balance in the world and we're going to have more peace. And war and conflict is expensive. Climate change is expensive. Financial crises are expensive. And if we don't learn how to manage money, learn how to demand that our public officials manage money properly and are good stewards and have good education, learn how to make balance in our own lives. Mm-hmm. We can't create balance in the world. And it's up to women. Men don't, their brains are not wired that way. They live much more in the ego, mm-hmm. especially poorly parented ones. And we've seen what that does in our world. And we're seeing what that does in our world. Mm-hmm. So it's also up to us to raise good daughters and sons who mm-hmm. are financially savvy. And if we don't become financially savvy, they're going to be facing all of these problems that we've left for them and mm-hmm. without the tools to solve them. And that's really what drives me to build Money Loves Women and train women, is that mm-hmm. we need a balanced, peaceful, well-led world. Mm-hmm. And I think it's going to fall to women. I really do. And I'm hopeful and optimistic for our world. But if you look at the data of what's going on, it's more challenging to be like that.
Yeah.
But my piece in that, because I also want to live an extraordinary life and I want other people to, is to bring forward this business for Money Loves Women. It's a huge passion project for me. I want to demonstrate, though, that it can be financially viable so other women can follow in that example. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have to salute you for not only running your business, but for teaching and supporting other women. I'm assuming it's mostly women that you're teaching mm-hmm. to also become powerhouses in the world and to take that take on that mantle. You know, we have so much in alignment. I think our mm-hmm. our philosophies are very similar. Mm-hmm. And so I salute you for what you're doing. It's extremely important. And there's so many women out there doing it. There are so many women who are dedicated to their little slice of the world. Haven't you found?
Oh, absolutely. And I've been having so much fun having those conversations because it's empowering that, you know, you and I are on the right path, right? In growing that, and it just fuels the passion, really. And I just couldn't agree more with everything that you've said. There is so much work to do, but we've never been more capable and more armed and more equipped and more energized to get it done. So I appreciate everything you said. It's just amazing. And I'm so excited to see where Money Loves Women goes and what you continue to create, because of course, I think it's the most valuable thing. I love all of it. Thank you. Thank you so much. And I am going to put all of Deb's information in the show notes, her website. She has a podcast, Money Loves Women. I'd encourage you to tune into that, listen to it, subscribe, follow her on Twitter, Instagram. So please check Deb out. And is there anything else that you'd like to say before we wrap up, Deb?
Oh, thanks for that opportunity. I actually mm-hmm. have my signature course coming out to teach. Great. These foundations of wealth building. And I'm very excited to bring that forward. So that's going to be our maiden voyage into intense training for women. And somewhere around mid-November to early December, that will be out. So anybody who's interested in finding those shortcuts to building wealth can come to Money Loves Women website and sign up for the email and podcast, and we'll be announcing more.
Terrific. We'll make sure to have that link in the show notes as well. So thank you so much. And everyone, continue being powerhouse.
Thank you, Nicole. It's an honor.
Thanks so much for listening to Becoming Powerhouse. You can find all of the links to our site and resources in the show notes. Let's connect on Instagram at @PowHerHouseMoney. And don't forget to subscribe to our newsletter at powerhousemoney.com. Remember, I want to connect with you. I want to hear your thoughts and help you with all the challenges you're having. So engage, send me a DM. And of course, if you're loving this podcast, let us know and go ahead and hit the subscribe button and leave a review.